The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
We're so glad you've stopped by. Welcome to Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's with your host, Kimber Stonehouse. Come indulge with us in the next hour as we explore a region of the world, its wine and spirits. We'll also talk about food, tours, and other amenities unique to this area. Sit back and enjoy. Now, here's Kimber Stonehouse.
Well, hello. Welcome back to Around the World in a Glass. And if you remember last week, I said that this was going to be graduation day. There's no test, so don't panic. Really just kind of moving into some of the more complex aspects of wine. I called it Wine 201, the advanced class. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of different things. Some of the things being, you know, temperature for serving wine and how to figure that out. And, you know, maybe some grape varietals. Preparing your palate to taste. So how we taste wines and, you know, at the store and as professionals trying to taste wines for consumers to buy, you know, because there's a lot of wine out there and I like to sell the things that I think are good quality. So without a whole lot of further ado, for lack of a better word, we are going to just kind of jump right in. I was doing a little research, like I always do. I go and read what other people say about some of the topics when I'm getting ready for a show. I kind of read about, you know, maybe the history of the country and get a few tidbits or, you know, that kind of thing. So today and earlier this week, I was reading from The Wine Bible by Karen McNeil. So if you've mastered Wine for Dummies, which is a fantastic book, by the way, it's filled with humor. It's got a lot of good, accurate, basic knowledge in it. You're not going to be able to pass the certified specialist of wine test from the Society of Wine Educators if you read Wine for Dummies, just so you know. But it is a great place to start. Like I said, it's written, it's entertaining. I had a big offense with the Dummies books when they first started coming out because I thought if I'm smart enough to pick up a book, you shouldn't call me dumb because I'm the one looking for the information. And to me, that means you're already fairly smart because you're going to find out more. So the Wine for Dummies book, though, in spite of my hesitations of the Dummies books, the Wine for Dummies book is a great place to start. After that, there's kind of this gap, just so you know, that Wine for Dummies is written at an easy, readable level. And then there's this big gap, and then you kind of get into things that are for people like me, you know, people that are reading at a much more complicated level and looking for details on, you know, how they know when to pick the grapes off the vine and the viticultural stuff, as well as, you know, all of the pages of grape varietals. But one of those that's a little bit more approachable, and some of my team have read it from beginning to end, and I myself kind of read it in chunks. I read, oh, hey, I want to learn about Barolo, a little more details. So I go reread the Barolo section. So I don't read it beginning to end. I never have. I use it as a what I would consider to be a reference book, and it's The Wine Bible by Karen McNeil. She writes, she's a fantastic woman. I had an opportunity to meet her 4 or 5 years ago. But she's an amazing woman. She doesn't write... I don't know how to say it the best way. She doesn't write like she's talking down to you. She writes just like sometimes, this, you know, she even says things like this is not exactly what you're going to think is exciting, but these details are going to be important. So that's maybe kind of what we're looking at today. Some of this is going to be interesting. Some of it, probably be okay. But she has in her book, as I was looking at it, 10 pages, 10 full pages, like dictionary of grape varietals. All right, so don't get frustrated if you don't know a bunch of grape varietals. Start with your basics and move from there. We're going to talk a little bit today about how to taste wines and how to compare things, but I couldn't believe it when I was looking through that book, and there's 10 full pages of grape varietals. I mean, and some of these I have never heard of. I've been in this industry for several years. I have never heard of some of these grapes. Some of them I'm like, oh, yeah, I think I had that once. Others I'm like, holy cow, I don't even know how to say that. Zinomavro, I know I've had that one. Zweigelt, that's just toward the end there. But anyway, it's one after another on these 10 pages. So wine is one of those things that once you start learning, you're going to want to continue to learn. There are other books that are much more complex than the Wine Bible. To me, it's kind of a, like I said, huge step from Wine to Wine for Dummies to the Wine Bible, but it's a great, it's a very, very good book. One of the things I want to talk about is when we're serving wines, the temperature that you're going to serve that wine at. Or I bought this white on the way home, and it's, you know, 100 degrees outside. I had it in my car, so it stayed in the air conditioning, but it's not 45 degrees and ready for me to drink it. But dinner is in, you know, well, I picked dinner up at the same time as I picked up the wine. So dinner is ready, and the wine is too warm. How do I get it cold fast enough? There's a couple methods. I often don't have ice at home. I tend to forget to either buy it or make the ice cubes. It's just one of those things. So one way we do it at the store and that we encourage people is an ice bath. So ice and a little bit of water, and you put that bottle down in there, and then within about 10 minutes, that bottle is ready to drink. It'll be really cold. So that's one way. If you're at a wine shop like Sportsman's, you can tell us you're on your way home and that you want to drink it when you get home. We'll put it in a bag of ice for you. Well, we got an ice machine in the back. We throw the bottle in with the ice, and boom. When you get home 10, 15 minutes later, the ice is ready. The wine is ready to drink because it's been in the ice bag. So, you know, if you're at a private little wine shop, you can always ask that. I mean, you could always stop at the gas station and buy a bag of ice, too, and put your bottle of wine in there and head on home if it's a 15 or 20-minute drive, because then the wine is ready when you get home with dinner. I also have been known to put my wine in the freezer, because, like I said, I don't often have ice at home, and I'm like, oh, I really want to drink that bottle of Chablis. But it's room temperature, and I don't want to wait, you know, an hour for it to get cold in the fridge. So I will pop it in the freezer. Learn this lesson from me. Don't try it at home without doing it this way. Set a timer. Set a timer. Because what's going to happen is if that bottle of wine stays in there too long and it starts to actually freeze, it's going to make a big mess, especially if it happens to be a sparkling. If it's a sparkling wine, it's going to blow up in your freezer. So take it from me, set a timer for about 20 minutes, and then check on it and see where it's at. And if it's still not quite cold enough, leave it in for another 5 minutes. But again, set the timer. That way something reminds you that you put the bottle of wine in the fridge, in the freezer. So those are my two cheater methods for chilling it down quick. Would I do that with something that was really, really expensive? Yeah, probably. I have where bubbles are concerned. You know, a nice bottle of champagne that I want to drink. Go ahead and speed chill it. So that's the way to get it ready to roll. The temperature I like to drink most of those is about 40 to 45 degrees. Bubbles a little colder. They just need to be colder, specifically for the opening process, because they don't fizz quite as much when you open it if it's colder. It's when it gets warmer at room temperature, just like opening a can of pop. If it's already cold out of the fridge, you don't get nearly so much of the explosion of the pop out of the top. But if you have it room temperature, it's much, much easier to shake up, even accidentally, and end up with a mess to clean up. So bubbles are the same way. All right, so we've got the wine chilled. We've got dinner on the table. Now, how do we go about tasting it? Or drinking the wine? And do we taste the wine, or are we going to savor the wine? Is it a wine you've had before? I mean, that's the questions here. So let's say it's a wine you haven't had before, and you're very curious. The wine shop recommended it, especially for what you're eating, and you were game to try something new. So you open it up. It's chilled. It's ready to roll. It's a white. We'll say it's a white because that's the kind of how we've been talking about it. So you open it up, and you pour some in your glass. Now, do you need to smell the cork? We've been over that before. And not so much. Look at it. Make sure, you know, looks like cork. But you really don't need to do much with the cork. I just set it aside. Now, pick up that glass and kind of swirl the wine a little bit in your glass. And then when you're ready, take a big sniff of the wine. Now, one thing that you want to do is you don't want to just smell it once. You want to smell it several times, kind of like, you know, or and then take a breath and then smell it again. And think about it as a... as an animal that often likes to smell food, think about it as a dog or a cat, especially a dog, that's on one side of the room and can smell that you've got something really tasty on your dinner table. And he's going to kind of sniff the air and continue to sniff the air for a while, especially until you give him maybe a bite of the food, and then he'll go back to sniffing the air. But think about that. So you don't want to just inhale the wine and try to get it all in one big long breath. You want to inhale it a couple of different times and smell that wine a couple of different times. Take a nice big sniff. Most of what you're going to taste as we have discussed before, is in your aromas. 2,000 different aromas that you can smell with your nose if you train your nose correctly. 2,000 different aromas. Your mouth tastes five things. That's it, five. So everything that you put in your mouth is going to be enhanced by how much you can get on the aromatics of that wine. So smell it, and, you know, if it's a nice light white, because that's kind of what we're talking about, you're going to smell, you know, some tropical fruits, maybe some pears, maybe some peaches or apricots. You might get some spice if it's a Chablis or something from France. Maybe you'll get some flintiness, or some people call it several things. Sometimes it comes across as flint, sometimes it's kind of stony, like a really old brick or a really old rock. So sometimes those aromas come forward. Minerality is another way. People often call that chalkiness will come forward, depending on your aromas, you know. And if you've ever been up near a chalkboard, we all know what chalk smells like. So those are sometimes other flavors you will get. Sometimes a grassiness, if you're drinking a Sauvignon Blanc, might get some grassiness or some lemongrass flavors. These are all good flavors and good aromatics. There's some others, but I'm not going to put those in your head. You want to know some of those others that aren't always so... Anyway, there's just a couple of them that when you refer to them, people are like, oh, thanks, that's what I wanted to smell in my wine. And so I'm not gonna toss those out there. You can go read about those. So you've smelled it a couple times, swirled it, taken a deep breath, and then smelled it again. Now it's time to put it on your palate and taste it. And right now we're tasting. We're not enjoying it with dinner. We're just trying to find out what this wine is all about. It's a new wine. What's this wine all about? So you put it in your mouth, and I usually swish it around a little bit and leave it in just for a few seconds in my mouth. Because if I just put it in my mouth and swallow it, I didn't get the chance to taste it yet. I mean, that's just drinking. I want to taste it. I want to know what's in here. When you leave it in your mouth for just a little bit, you get to do what you actually can smell it better. I know, it doesn't make much sense. But the back of your mouth is connected to the back of your nose. So think about the times that you have, you know, gotten tickled or something when you're eating dinner and, you know, your pop comes out your nose. We've all done it. Your pop, water, if you've been drinking a long time, maybe your scotch, you know, whatever it is, you know, you get to laughing. You can't keep it in your mouth and it comes out your nose. It hurts. It's also extremely funny as adults and as kids whenever that happens. I've always thought that was hilarious, whether it was happening to me or somebody else. But so that passage back there allows the aromatics of the wine when it's in your mouth to come up to the back side of your nose. So you get to smell the wine all over again while it's in your mouth, which really enhances the flavors. It's different. And so you'll get some aromas when you're just smelling it in the glass, and then the others you'll get through this reverse nasal passage area that's up from the back of your mouth, which is really kind of cool when you stop and think about it. Wow, I get to smell the wine before I drink it, and then I can smell it even more when it's in my mouth. And so take the time to keep it in your mouth for just a few seconds. Swish it around a little bit. You're not gargling with it, but swish it around a little bit and really enjoy all of those aromatics that come up from the backside. And you're like, wow, this wine has so much going on. And then you go ahead and swallow it, and you get the finish. And then I usually do that two or three times because little sips. We're not talking a whole mouthful. Little sips to do that with. Because what'd you have before you bought the wine? Well, you had lunch about 4 hours ago, and maybe you had an apple in the afternoon if you were eating healthy. Otherwise, maybe you had a bag of M&Ms. If you had meetings and you had Altoids, that is going to be a problem. At least it is for me. Mints are the one thing that I think just kills anything on the wine. So whenever I'm tasting the wine, I try to take several sips of it to make sure that whatever I had, even an hour, 2 or 3 hours ago, I've gotten those out of my palate. I've gotten my palate ready to really enjoy this wine. So you taste it, swish it around, swallow it, taste it again. And usually by the second or the third taste, all of a sudden you're really getting the wine. It's, you know, your coffee is gone and your tea and your pop, whatever you had to drink, the mints and the apples and the M&Ms are all gone. And now you're just enjoying the wine. So then you can really start to taste it and get its flavor profile. And then what I'm going to do after I've kind of figured out what the wine is all about, now I'm going to enjoy just pairing it with my food. Am I going to continue to swish the wine in my mouth and do all those things? I don't. And we're going to talk about that as we move forward today. That's not something I do as I continue to drink, but it's what I do when there's a new glass of wine in front of me. So when it's something new I haven't had. All right, so that's how I prepare the palate to taste something new, and then I enjoy my dinner. All righty, moving on. What is the difference? And we kind of already touched on it, but we're going to touch on a little bit more. What is the difference between, I call it three different things, tasting, drinking, and savoring. Well, I've described what we do when we're tasting. And what we do at the store or as professionals is often we'll do that same thing with tasting. And then often instead of swallowing it, we will spit it out. And you might be like, oh, you're wasting good wine. Well, yes, sometimes. Sometimes we're tasting things on quality and we don't always like that quality. So, you know, you're not really wasting good wine. You're wasting maybe something that we consider to be a little mediocre. But also, we often do tastings of several wines. First of all, it's illegal for us to taste and drink at the store when we're on duty. So it is something that we have to spit because that is what Arizona law requires. The other thing is when I go to like a trade show or we have a tasting at the store where we're helping pick out new wine bar items and things like that, we're going to taste 20, 30, 40 wines sometimes. If you're not spitting by about the fourth or fifth glass that you've tasted, and yes, I said that with quotes, tasted, your palate is gone. I mean, it's hard enough to taste 25, 30, 40 wines and not have what we call palate fatigue. But if you taste them and drink them, even if you only drink those 2 ounces or that ounce that you got in your mouth and you swished around and you go ahead and you swallow it because that's the way I like to taste my wine, you're going to do 4, 5, 6 wines. And it's going to start to affect how your palate judges the wines. So we do spit because it's what we have to do. And also because your palate gets too worn out and the alcohol starts to take an effect. And even the hardiest of tasters will tell you they have to do that. So I go to professional trade shows. I am looking for the bucket to spit in, or I carry a little glass and I just spit in my little glass and then dump it in the bucket. Because I want to savor each wine. I want to enjoy, not savor, I want to taste each wine and really be able to tell the distinction between that wine and the next one. Some people go through and they taste all the whites and then they taste all the reds, or they taste all the bubbles and then all the whites and all the reds. And you can do that. I tend to mix mine up. Sometimes that's because, like at a trade show, you're tasting and you want to taste several things at that table. Well, you finally got through to talk to the person who's doing the pouring, and so you want to sample things that maybe you haven't had before or try a new vintage. And we're going to try to get to that today about what is the difference in vintage. So it might be something a little pricier, and I want to know the new vintage and have that opportunity. But as you go through, I just like to mix them up. It works for me. It also, for me, keeps my palate a little more fresh. So instead of trying, 4 whites and then 15 big reds, I'm trying, a couple of whites and a couple of reds, and I constantly keep my palate a little more fresh. It's what works for me. There is no right or wrong when it comes to doing that kind of tasting in the professional world. You can do it whatever works for you. I've known people who carry around, like, lemon water, and so they'll taste several things, and then they'll drink some water with lemon in it because that will kind of brighten the palate again and make it come back to life. I'm a real big fan of fizzy water, and that brightens my palate and makes it so I can continue to taste more wine. So that's kind of why we spit. How do you determine quality versus price? Because I've talked about that a lot. I've talked about bang for your buck wines. I've talked about all of these kinds of things. How is it that I personally, or the team at the store, when we're tasting wines, how is it that we know quality versus price? How do you know when you put it in your mouth and you swish, whether it's a $30 bottle or it's a $10 bottle? I mean, and we'll say it when we're tasting wines, oh, well, what's the cost on this? This is going to be about 15 bucks on the shelf. Oh, that's a really good wine for 15 bucks. Oh, well, what's the cost on this? Oh, this will be about $35 on the shelf. Nope. That is not worth 35 bucks. I wouldn't pay 35 bucks for that. And you can bet if we wouldn't pay 35 bucks for it, we're going to have a hard time selling it for $35. So we try to make sure that bang for buck, quality for price, is always in the right ballpark. So one of the things, because we're getting ready to go to break, one of the things we're going to talk about right after the break is how to figure out, or what ways do we know, what is it, those intangible little things that we're getting on our palate, how do we know that it's worth its price? And it's not, oh, well, it was good, because good and I liked it are not very good definers. Because I can like a lot of wines, but they necessarily aren't great or they're usually pretty good bang for their buck because I'm a little picky about that. So usually my wines are a good bang for their buck. But we are going to talk about that, about determining quality versus price and making sure that when you buy it, you feel like you got a good bargain when you go home and you're like, wow, this drink's amazing. And I only paid $15 for it, or I only paid $8. I've got a couple at the store that we like, and they're like $9. And it's like, wow, this stuff is fantastic. What is it that we're looking for that helps us define quality and price? And we will be right back in a few minutes.
News, opinion, passion. Your voice counts. Call toll free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Tune in to the Voice America Variety Channel on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Voice America Variety broadcasts a diverse array of topics, reaching a global community. Our experts come from all walks of life, and the topics they discuss are everything from current events, arts and entertainment, leadership, parenting, relationships, self-improvement, career advice, and a variety of other topics. Check us out today. You're sure to find something of interest. Voice America Variety. Talk on today's hot topics.
Could you use some more organization in your life? Sure, we all could. But where to start? In the home? At work? With yourself? The answer is very likely yes, yes, and yes. Tune in to Let's Get Organized with Meryl Starr. It's all about how to let go of the clutter in your life, from the personal issues to the physical spaces. Meryl and her guests will work on a different area to improve each week so you can take back control in your life. Let's Get Organized with Meryl Starr airs live Fridays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. You are listening to Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's, with your host, Kimber Stonehouse. If you have a question for one of our upcoming programs, please send an email to aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. That's aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. Now, back to our show.
All right, so quality versus price. How do you know which is which? We've talked a lot when we talked about the incredible Bordeaux and DRCs that were, you know, $1,000 a bottle. You know, that's going to be incredible quality. The collectors wouldn't collect them if they didn't continually, deliver on their product. However, those are really out of my personal budget. I am in that $15 to $25, I would assume, like most of my listeners. That doesn't mean I don't absolutely have some amazing things at home that I've paid a lot of money for, that I love to drink. And that doesn't mean that I don't take every opportunity to continue to build my palate and to drink those expensive wines when, they bring things by to taste. In fact, we had a tasting today with Ladera that was, just always good to be refreshed on how fantastic those wines are from Napa Valley. So I take those opportunities every time I can because that continues to develop my palate. And so I encourage you to taste, sip, try, savor, all of those things whenever you're out and have an opportunity to do tastes at a wine bar, because then you can taste a lot of different things that maybe you aren't willing to buy and take home yet, but you can try them out, taste them, and find out, oh my gosh, I should be drinking this. This is fantastic, and it's not expensive. All right, so things that we're looking for. When I taste a wine, if I'm familiar with the grape varietal, so pick your favorite grape varietal. Your favorite today, my favorite, I'm going to start with, Riesling. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But pick your favorite grape varietal. Now, think about the way your favorite wine with that grape tastes. So think about, say, if you picked your favorite was Sauvignon Blanc or Cabernet, or you picked your favorite as Pinot Noir, okay? Any one of those, just some examples to kind of get your mind working. All right, so your favorite wine and the way and the favorite brand of that grape. So your favorite varietal and the favorite brand of that grape. Okay? You got that in your head? All right. Now, you're going to compare every Pinot Noir to that specific brand. In my head, I'm going to think about Ladera because I just had their cab. And I'm going to think about that being my staple, which it's not, but it's a good example. And I'm going to think, okay, now when I try this brand X over here, maybe it's a brand I know, maybe it's a brand I don't know. Does it have, what kind of aromas does it have? Does it smell like Cabernet? Does it smell like Pinot Noir? If it's Pinot Noir, it should smell like Pinot Noir. So that means I should get some, maybe some cranberry and some mushroom, maybe some bright cherries if it comes from Russian River. Just, you know, does it smell like what I know Pinot Noir should smell like? Okay? And if the answer is yes, and it has a lot of aromatics, fantastic. If the answer is no, it smells kind of funky. I'm not sure I dig this. This is Pinot, but it's from Chile. And when I smell it, I feel like I smell green peppers or vegetal notes, which usually indicates that grapes were not as ripe. I'm picking on Chile because I kind of get a lot of those vegetal notes from most Chilean wines. But there are many Chilean wines that don't have those vegetal notes. But so if I smell like vegetal notes, asparagus, green pepper, green bean, sometimes that means that the grapes were picked before they were completely ripe. Maybe there was a storm coming in. Maybe the grapes were, you know, for whatever reason, the grapes were picked at a time that was not optimum. So they didn't quite ripen into their red fruits, especially if we're talking Pinot Noir. And then I got to think about, is it from Oregon? Is it from Burgundy? Is it from California? So all of those are going to have a different flavor profile. So first, I'm smelling it to see if there is an aroma. And sometimes you'll smell it, and there's not a lot of aroma. And I don't have a stuffy nose. I'm not fighting a cold. There just isn't a whole lot of smell here. Well, if it's a grape varietal that should have a lot of aroma, Pinot Noir, Sauvignon Blanc, some of those, they should have lots of aroma. Then, you know, I'm not thinking this is going to be good bang for its buck. It's kind of missing a key component of my tasting is the aromatics. So if it's missing a lot of aroma, that's already kind of a strike against it. But, you know, let's go ahead. The aromas aren't bad, because if it smells bad, all right, so if it smells bad, what am I talking about? All right, I'm talking about, does it smell moldy? If it smells moldy, so like somebody had a box sitting over in the corner of the garage and it got wet and then all the books in it molded, I am not putting that in my mouth. That is bad wine. And I do mean the word bad. It isn't bad as in just not good. It is bad. We call it corked in the industry, but it'll smell like mold. It'll smell like a dusty, a wet dog. Okay, if you've ever had a dog come in the house after it's been raining in the Midwest, that dog doesn't smell very good. It's soaking wet. It's throwing its mud and water all over the place. It smells musty. It smells dank. These are not things that we want in a bottle of wine. So if it smells like that, sometimes the wine will smell like sulfur. You know that smell when you, well, rotten eggs is one thing that smells like sulfur, but also when you strike a match. Sulfur is used in a lot of the winemaking processes. I believe it's even still legal to use that in organic. So it's used in the processes. Every once in a while, a bottle, for some reason, and nobody seems to know why, will retain more sulfur than maybe any other bottle in the box. So every once in a while, a bottle, just when you open it and you pour the glass, you smell sulfur. I am not putting that in my mouth. It taints the palate. The aromatics are not good. They're not supposed to taste. It's not supposed to smell like that. So those are bottles that are off. That is different than a bottle that is not good or not appreciated. So if the aromas are off-putting, then don't drink it. You know, don't drink it. If they smell like mold, no way. It smells like sulfur. There's another one that's called oxidized. That one's a really hard one to describe for most people. But they are wines that have been tainted by age or by not being corked. The cork didn't last very well. And there's an off-putting aroma on that as well. So those are wines that would just be flat bad. We'd put them over in a box and nobody else would be allowed to even smell them, let alone taste them. So that's different than a wine that has green grapes, green pepper or asparagus kind of aromas. Those are just, it's just a different type of bad. Or, yeah, it's hard to come up with enough words. I think the English language needs a couple more million words in it. So if the wine smells good, or smells like you think that grape should smell when you buy a bottle of wine, then what you're going to want to do after you ascertain that it smells right, we want to put it in your mouth. Now I'm going to judge it based on, is it too acidic? Meaning that the, you know, I feel like I just swallowed vinegar instead of Sauvignon Blanc or vinegar instead of Cabernet. That's not appealing to me. And sometimes they'll be that acidic. So I balance the acidity and then I want to taste that fruit. You know, I could smell the fruit. I could smell those cranberries and those cherries. I want to taste them now in my mouth. And I want to get those kind of red fruit kind of flavors. Okay, I got the red fruit. I got the acidity. Does it have any finish? Well, yeah, it continues to linger. Once I've swallowed the wine or spit it out, whichever way we're doing it, I can continue to taste the wine. It's still there. It's still in my mouth and lingering around. And oh my goodness, what is that? And maybe you get a little complexity. Okay, so if that wine smells good, I put it in my mouth, and it's all that I expect from that particular grape, and then there's a nice finish, then I'm going to say, okay, now it's time to judge the price. All right, because it passed all the immediate tests. Now it's time to judge the price. So that is a complex kind of version of, is it smooth and the richness of the flavor? And I don't mean big. I mean the richness of the flavor for its region. So if I'm drinking a red Burgundy, I'm going to expect some really good rich flavor profile, but not fruity. It's kind of a little more earthy, and then it's going to have some really good bracing acidity and a long lingering finish. And I'm going to say, okay, I'd pay $50 for this bottle. Sometimes I'm going to say, you know what, I pay $25. So it's a balance of the wine. So the quality, it's like buying clothes or artwork or music. You know, there's one author I read in the last week talked about it being like Shakespeare. You can recognize that Shakespeare is really great, but maybe you don't want to sit at home and read Shakespeare in the evening. I love to read Shakespeare in the evening. I might be a little weird that way, but at the same time, there are some wines that are just wow, and you get that on your palate. So you can have your everyday drinkers, and those would be things that hit all the high points, and you're happy with. They end smooth, or if you like a lot of tannin or, you know, that kind of thing, but they're not bitter. There's a difference between tannin and bitter, a difference between a long finish and something that leaves this bitter flavor profile in your mouth. I've often talked about Pinot Grigio. I kind of pick on that grape a little bit because for me, and I do wonder if it's a hereditary thing, just because I meet a few other people like that, for me that grape always comes across my palate, almost always, as bitter on the finish. This is not a grape I go buy. I have to taste them because of where I work. So I always taste them. And every once in a while I find one that, wow, that was really good. But I can tell you which ones I think are better quality and which ones I think are not good quality. So I can still judge that, but it's not a bottle I'm going to buy and take home because I really don't care for Pinot Grigio. I would much prefer a different type of white, unoaked light wine. So hopefully this is making some sense that, you know, there's a quality issue that you can tell. Sometimes a wine will have, you put it in your mouth, it smells great, you put it in your mouth and there's fruitiness at the front, so you get that amazing flavors right there, and then there's nothing. And you're like, what happened to the wine? And then all of a sudden, there's this little bit of finish at the back. And we call that being like a donut. There's a great big hole in the middle of the wine. So you have some start and you have some finish, but the complexities across the palate didn't keep happening. So for us, that's a wine we wouldn't put in the store. It's not a well-made wine. It's got some gaps in it. And, you know, there's reasons I'm sure that that happens. But for us, it's just not something we want to sell if it's got those great big holes in the middle. Sometimes a wine will come across the palate, and it's funny. Somebody described it one time and says, it's pointy. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I put it in my mouth, and right at the front, it started out beautiful. And then it had, like, these sharp edges all around in the middle of the palate, like so seriously in the middle of your palate, like right in the middle of your tongue. It kind of felt like it was all prickly. And then you swallowed it, and it tasted pretty good. But it's like, yeah, what else do you call that? Pointy was a great descriptor. Again, a wine I wouldn't put on the shelf. It was something that we were trying to see if we wanted to put it on the shelf, and we were like, oh, that's not, it didn't have a richness and a smoothness. So a wine that is, quote, good, will have this kind of evolution that happens as it crosses your palate. It will evolve. It'll change a little bit. It'll start out fruity, and then it'll move into some acidity and some balance. And just still, the flavors will keep going, though, so you won't be missing the fruitiness. And then it gets toward the back of your palate. You're getting those aromas now through the back of your back of that nasal passage. And now it's starting to continue to, you know, linger around a little bit. And you swallow it, and then a few minutes later, even, you know, 60 seconds, sometimes even 5 minutes later, you're like, wow, that wine is really good. That's what we're talking about when we talk about great wines. We'll often have that, and they usually have a price tag to match. But you can find some of those at like $10 to $15. So those are the things we look for when we taste. We look for, does it match its varietal? And if it doesn't, is it because of its region? You know, is it something different that specifically Chilean wine offers that you don't get when you drink a California Cab? Or is it specifically something that would come out of Spain? There's this earthiness and dirtiness of Tempranillo. Is that specifically something that we want in that wine because it's from Spain and not from California? You know, so constantly think those things through and then think about, what would I be willing to pay for this? I have a lot of wine. I've drank a lot of wine. Maybe I'm not willing, if I'm not willing to pay $45 for it, I certainly can't ask a consumer or yourselves to pay $45 for it. If I'm not willing to fork out my $45, I'm not going to put it on the bar and try to sell it at $45. So those are the things we're thinking about when we're savoring those wines. And that's why it becomes so very important to taste and then spit and then taste again and then spit, because we're going to taste a bunch of stuff. And I don't want to be well on my way to a buzz because I'm not going to continue to judge and analyze the same way. I'm going to start to be influenced by the wine. If you spit it out, the alcohol doesn't have as much effect on you, and you can continue to taste longer and pick those wines. If I could predict what wines were going to be rock stars on the wine bar, I would really start to be rich. I think that if I could pick that every time, because we pick the wines for the wine bar. We pick 75 to 80. We roll a new list every 3 months. Those of you who know us know that we're constantly looking at new stuff. Constantly bringing new things in and putting them on the shelf, and sometimes grapes that nobody's ever heard of, and sometimes yet another version of, you know, Albarino or another version of Pinot Grigio that we found that we thought was just amazing and very cool, and usually a fair price. But if I'm going to do all of those tastings and all of that wine and change all that up, how do I know which ones are going to sell? Because, you know, we're retailers. We're a bar. We want people to also enjoy the wines that we thought were so cool. We're a bunch of cork dorks, as I've called us before, who love wine and food. But what makes all of us kind of tick is being able to pair up that person with a wine they're going to love. What we want more than anything is for you to come in or call us on the phone and say, hey, this is what I'm looking for. And I could say, oh, well, we've got this. What kind of price range are you looking for? Because we've got this and this and this. And I think all of those are going to be what you like to go with that dinner. You know, that's what really makes our day, is to be able to help people be paired up with the wine that's going to just be in their price point and just be something that they're going to take home and love. So with all that being said, how do we know which ones to pick for the bar? How does something end up on the bar? Well, it goes through first the tasting process, and then we look at price point. And, you know, if it's a really weird Greek grape that nobody's ever heard of, has some really weirdness on the palate, and it costs about $75 a bottle, probably we're not going to put that on the list. No matter how good it is, it might show up on the shelf. We might play with it as a special a little bit to introduce it to a few people that we think would like it. But probably we're not going to put that on the list. It's a little too off the beaten path. And part of the thing on a wine list is you want to make sure you pour things, first of all, that people can afford to buy up to $20 or $25 or $30 by the glass, but also so that you can pour enough of it so you don't waste bottles. That's a very big, important component of a wine bar, is that you don't want the bottle, you pour one glass and the whole rest of the bottle, nobody wants that, so you have to throw it out. So you want to make sure you not appeal to all the masses, but that you appeal to a big enough portion of people that you can pour the whole bottle off in a 3 or 4 day time period. All right, so when we're putting those on the list, how do we know which ones are going to be successful? We don't. We just pick stuff that we think is cool, a fair price, different, and try to balance it between flavor profiles and price points so that there's a nice big variety so people can come in and learn about wine if that's what they want to do, then come in, learn about different wines. But at the same time, we don't know. If I would be a millionaire, I would be, you know, I would be incredibly wealthy if I could pick which wines were going to be a rock star on the wine bar every quarter. It's always different. We have some that come on and we're like, oh, you know, I'm pretty sure this one's going to do well. We had two of them on the last list. I won't tell you the names, so don't ask. But we had two of them on the last list that I thought would have killed it. And we sold three cases of one for a three-month list, and I think only two cases of the other. I was stunned. I expected to just fly for that whole last list. I expected those two items to just fly, and they didn't move at all. I'm still stunned, actually. We just changed the list 2 weeks ago. I'm still stunned. All right, so hopefully you're getting this concept of quality versus price. Experiment with it. Think about it. Compare, you know, your favorite that you think is great bang for the buck to something else that you buy that's similar and say, okay, yeah, I see where she's going with this. All right, we're going to head to break real quick. When we come back, I'm going to cover just a little bit more with that, and then I am going to talk about how to cook with wine, how to substitute, and how not to break your wallet. Right back.
News, opinion,
hear me.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
When you look at something that's been designed, whether it's clothing, architecture, or a work of art, do you stop and wonder about the inspiration and thought process that went into the design? Tune in to Dishing the Dirt on Design with hosts Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schappa. We'll take the mystery out of the creation process, along with revealing the backstory from art to fashion to travel and so much more. Listen to Dishing the Dirt on Design every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Tune in every week for Sex Out Loud. Host Tristan Taramino will discuss everything from sexual pleasure to sexual politics. Get an insider's perspective from leaders in the adult film industry, the LGBT community, and the sex-positive world. From kink to non-monogamy, nothing is off-limits. Plus, you can call in to join the conversation. Sex Out Loud airs every Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's, with your host, Kimber Stonehouse. If you have a question for one of our upcoming programs, please send an email to aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. That's aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. Now, back to our show.
All righty. We were talking about all of those things about how to tell the differences between customer favorites and ours and budget versus price and all that kind of thing. So if you have more questions about that or you want us to cover it again or talk about it more, you know, just email us at the aroundtheworldintheglass@hotmail.com. Be happy to talk about that some more. But we're going to move on to cooking and baking with wine. I've talked a little bit in the past about some of my favorite substitutions to do, substituting my really nice bottle of sherry. Granted, not $100 bottle of sherry, but like a $20 bottle of sherry for vanilla in baking recipes. So I've been known to do a few random little things like that, a few little off the nobody told me to do it. It just kind of sounded like it tastes good. So we're going to talk a little bit, though, also about cognac and burgundy and things like that. People are constantly coming into the store and asking any one of us that they talk to, I need a really great white to cook with. And, you know, so you come in and you ask, and the immediate thing I look at you and say is, what are you making? And I'm not censoring your recipes, I promise. I'm just trying to make sure that if you ask for a dry white and you're making something that needs a dry white, that I pick the best dry white for what you're cooking. So keep that in mind. If you're going into an actual wine shop, not just a grocery store to ask questions, but you're going into a wine shop with people who really understand food and wine, they're going to have a couple questions for you. What flavors are you looking for? What are you doing? What are you not doing? You know, how are you cooking it? What are you serving it with? I need to know those things so I can point you in the right direction for the white wine, the correct wine. Now, one thing that is very important to remember is if you don't like it, don't cook with it. All right? If you don't like the flavor of it, don't cook with it. Now, there are wines I have cooked with that nothing was wrong with the wine. It was inexpensive. It was an everyday drinker. I just wasn't thrilled. So I drank a glass. I'm like, it's all right. Maybe it's an inexpensive little Pinot, and there's nothing wrong with it. I just wasn't thoroughly enjoying it. So I'm going to pop it in. I'm going to put a cork on it or some kind of a seal. I'm going to pop it in the freezer. If there's about a glass gone, I'm going to throw it in the freezer. And the next time I need to make something that requires a red burgundy or a Pinot Noir, I'm going to grab that, let it thaw out, and cook with that wine. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But if you taste a wine and it tastes bitter, it tastes watery, it tastes, I don't know, too much acidity, no fruit, has any one of those really off-putting aromas that I mentioned earlier, like musty wet dog and mold, or, you know, all those other things, for heaven's sakes, don't use that in your food. If you're going to use that in your food is going to taste like acid. It's going to taste like bitterness. It's going to taste like moldy wet dog. I don't want any of those flavors in my food. So if you do not like a wine, I'm not saying it doesn't hit your palate, that it's made okay, there's nothing wrong with the wine, I just don't really enjoy drinking it, then that's okay to cook with. If you taste it and it doesn't taste good, don't use it to cook with, because all of those flavors you don't like are going to jump out. It's like I'm not fond of green peppers. So when people cook a lot with green peppers, I sigh. I often eat it anyway. But up until recently, I had to pick out the green peppers. And in fact, I didn't even like the food because it was tainted by the green peppers. My brother's that way with olives. If I cook and use olives in any recipe at all, he knows it. I mean, they could be pureed, so he can't even see them. It doesn't matter. This has got olives in it, doesn't it? And I'm like, how do you know that? I really thought I had them hidden well. When you think about that, the same goes for your wine. That's the whole reason we cook with wine. It's so that some of that flavor will be imparted into the food. So keep that in mind. Another thing is you don't have to buy the most expensive thing. So you're making beef bourguignon, okay? Classic recipe, right? I've never made it. I don't eat beef. But anyway, so you're making beef bourguignon. You don't have to buy a $100 bottle of Burgundy to put in your beef bourguignon. In fact, I'd rather you didn't. You're going to get a better flavor for your beef if you buy something a little less expensive. A Beaujolais Village is going to be fantastic. It's Gamay, not Pinot Noir, but it is the ancestor. And they're going to run you $10 to $15. You want to buy something that you can also drink with the dinner. Louis Latour makes a little $15 bottle of Pinot that's fantastic. It's Val de Mosine or something like that is how you say it. And it is fantastic, and it would make a great beef burgundy. And then you can have the rest of the wine with your dinner. Or if you want to have the really amazing burgundy, then you could have the amazing burgundy with your dinner and put the cork in the other half and throw the other half of your, you know, inexpensive burgundy in the freezer and use it the next time you make it. So the quality is important. It needs to taste good, but it doesn't need to be the most expensive thing in the market. People come in on a regular basis and say, I need some cognac to put in a food recipe. And I'm like, okay, what are you making? And then they tell me whatever dessert it is. And I'm like, do you really need cognac? And how much cognac do you need? Well, I need about 2 tablespoons. Okay, a bottle of cognac, if you're buying the XO, which is what people usually come in and ask for, it's $160. I'm not cooking with that. I'm drinking every last little drop I can get out of the bottle, but I am not going to cook with it. And this is pretty much the feeling of the majority of people I work with. I just don't see any reason to waste the money on that. I mean, the money is fantastic for the cognac. It's not the cognac you're wasting the money on. It's the fact that you're cooking with it. For my cooking cognac or my cooking brandy, because cognac is a distilled spirit made from grapes, so I could take a Spanish brandy that costs about $25 a bottle on the shelf. It's Torres, 10-year-old brandy. It's amazing. It's a Spanish brandy. I would drink it neat. You know, just a little sip in the evening to finish off dinner. It's fantastic. So if it's that good a quality, why can't I use it in my cooking instead of that $165 bottle of cognac? So please feel free, you know, think about those things before you do it. A lot of recipes will call for flambois, you know, that amazing raspberry stuff. And again, yet another flavor I don't like. Sounds like I'm picky, huh? But I'm really not. But the frambois, which is really good, but it's expensive. So if you need raspberry liqueur, you can get – I wouldn't go as cheap as some of the Hiram Walker stuff. No offense to Hiram Walker, but sometimes it doesn't always impart all the best flavors unless you're putting it in a cocktail. But there is some other brands from France called Mazenaise that do an amazing raspberry liqueur, and they're $10 to $15 cheaper than your frambois. Same goes with recipes that call for Grand Marnier and Cointreau. Those are amazing spirits. They're very, very good. But if you're cooking with them, then buy a smaller bottle of something less expensive that's an orange liqueur and kind of swap that out. And a good wine shop or a good liqueur shop will be able to help you figure out one that doesn't cost you a fortune. The idea is to be able to make the cake many times, not just once. So keep that in mind. What's the deal with cooking wine and sherry? I don't buy them. That's the deal. Cooking wine and or cooking sherry are the lowest of the low. They're filled with salt. They're watery. I refuse to spend my money on something that is that poor quality. Because if that's what's in those, and that's what is in those, why do I want to add that into my food? I want to add salt where I want salt, not with the wine I'm choosing to buy. You know, so if you are using it calls for a cooking wine and you use a quality wine, then make sure you adjust your flavor profile to have that extra salt if you think you need it. But, you know, the thing about salt is you can always add more. You can't take it away. Once you put the salt in there, it's in there. But if you think it needs salt at the dinner table, it's easy to add a little salt. So to me, that's always one place I like to seriously err on caution. I don't want to oversalt my food in its preparation. So I tend to wait until I'm done cooking and then find out if it needs a little salt. But no, cooking wine, cooking sherry, they're not in my cabinets. They won't be in my cabinets because it's such poor quality. I don't want to spend my $5 or $8 or $10 on that when I could get a really great bottle of wine and might actually want to drink the rest. Look for those questions when you come in. Be willing to ask those questions and make sure you go home with the right wine for your food. That's the important thing there. One other thing that I wanted to talk about, because we are just about out of time like we are every week. Next week, I want to advertise this really quick. Next week, food and wine. Jillian Jones, that works in the store with me, she is preparing this big thing on classic pairings. But we are not only going to talk about classic pairings. She is going to talk about how to take that classic pairing that maybe is out of your budget, why it works, and then how to have it at home kind of on an everyday level. So I am really excited. I've heard the notes. I've talked with her a little bit about it, and I think it's going to be really cool. So it's one of those things we really haven't devoted an entire session to just food and wine. Restaurant Week is getting ready to happen here in Phoenix starting, I think, it's September 15th, and it'll run for 8 or 9 days. And we're taking part in that this year as sportsmen. But in getting ready for that, we're going to talk about food and wine pairings next week. All right. Two more things. One, how does the wine change as it ages? And how do you know what to pick and how to age it? We've talked briefly about this before. So if a wine, I guess it's better to assess why you like the wine more so than will it age well. So if you like the wine because it's fruity up front and it has, you know, a nice finish and you really love all that fruity jamminess, then don't age that wine. I mean, 6 months, okay. A year, okay. But as a wine ages, one of the first things to go is all that fruit. So if the main reason you like to drink it is all that fruit, then there's no reason to age it. I mean, I think it's really cool to take a wine out of the cellar that I've had, you know, for 6 years and say, oh, hey, I wonder if it still tastes good. And it's fantastic. You know, I like to do that. But I also don't drink my wine only for its jamminess and its fruitiness up front. I drink the wine looking for what I call complexities and nuances and those secondary flavors of tobacco and earth and all those kinds of things that we get. As the fruit kind of tames, these other flavors come forward from the wood and from the grape and how it was grown. And all those things kind of start to come forward. And you end up with a completely different wine as it ages. So that's what I like about aging my wine. And we're gonna talk more as we move forward about aging wines. But picking the wines to age, I pick something that has a lot of acidity, but yet a good amount of fruit. So if it's not good now, it doesn't mean that it will be better when it ages. I have to like the wine now to commit my cellar space to it because I only have so many bottles that I can put in my little cute cellar. So I always make sure that they're wines that I really, really love. And I see the potential in them by tasting them. And again, have questions on that. How do I choose or how do I get started doing that? I would love to spend a whole lot of time on that sometime in the future if there's interest. So email me if you have interest in learning that because I would love to spend more time talking about that. One of the other things is how do you turn off all this analysis? So we're wine professionals and we're, you know, cork dorks and foodies. And how do I go out to dinner anywhere but especially someplace that's maybe not expensive, just your everyday place to go out with friends. How do I turn all that off and actually enjoy my dinner? Whether I have wine or not. But, I mean, you know, how do you turn all that off? It's the same thing that I had to do even as a classical musician, was how do I go to a classical concert and turn off, you know, the parts of me that have been trained to critique and analyze everything? How do you turn all that off? Well, I always remember that I'm there to enjoy. So when I'm out for dinner with friends, then I'm turning off the analysis part. Yeah, I'm still going to pick really good wine. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to drink, you know, Boone's Farm. But I'm going to drink quality. But at the same time, I'm going to taste the wine, and then I'm going to sit back and relax and enjoy the conversation with friends and enjoy the wine. I'm going to enjoy the food as well. Now, there are some times when I don't always enjoy the food, but I don't think it's because I'm extremely critical. I think it's because maybe the food isn't living up to its hype, or the food isn't living up to my standard. Well, I don't do a lot of complaining at a restaurant on that point. I usually just don't go back. It just becomes a place that it was all right. But it's not someplace I want to frequent. So that's how I turn it off. I just turn it off to enjoy. I don't want to be that annoying person at dinner that's, oh, this wine, can you taste the raspberries? Oh, and can you taste this? And, oh, did you get that? I got some little nuances of black currant there. I mean, I don't want to be that person. I just want to enjoy my dinner. And I want to savor the wine, sit back, and enjoy the flavors I have put together through what I ordered for food and the wine I've got and then the company that I'm with. That's how I turn it off and just sit back and savor. So hopefully that is a good tip for you, because I've been with the other type. I've probably been the other type and not realized it, because it's very easy done. But I've done it even as a musician and as a performer and somebody who appreciates theater and opera and all those things, that unless the performance is really poor quality, meaning that they just don't know what they're doing, I really just sit back to enjoy my evening. And that's what I do with my food. So I know how to taste my wine, I know how to drink wine, and I know how to just sit back and relax and savor. So I encourage you this week, taste like a professional, and then sit back, enjoy your food, and savor your wine and your company. And we will be back next week to talk about food and wine pairings, and with Jillian Jones from the store to talk about food and wine and how we can make those happen even more at home, and how more ideas for your food and wine pairings. I think it's going to be awesome. I'm very excited about it. In the meantime, find a good bottle of wine and sip and savor. Till next week.
Thanks again for tuning in. Around the World in a Glass is heard every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Please join Kimber Stonehouse from Sportsman's Fine Wines and Spirits next week for another glass.